Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The nation of Syria marks a bloody milestone over the weekend, a year since the first nationwide demonstrations against the regime of President Bashar al-Assad. The last few days have brought bombings and firefights once again, this time, though, to the center of the capital, Damascus. Aleppo and Homs have also seen more serious bloodshed over the last 24 hours. The toll of the dead and missing continues to climb, well over 8,000 in Syria, according to the United Nations. And 8,000 is also the number of people still believed to be missing in Libya. A year ago today, U.S. forces joined the international intervention to protect Libyan civilians. That conflict ended with the death of Muammar Gaddafi and a regime change, the future of which is still unclear. The BBC's Wira Davis reports that there is a growing fear the missing in Libya will never be found and the bodies in mass graves never identified.
This is a big piece of wasteland just outside Tripoli, and a mechanical digger is excavating a huge hole in the ground. Out of the earth, bones are sticking. Femurs, shoulder bones, and fragments of human skulls. This is a mass grave. According to Ahmed Amer, a doctor, these are the bodies of people killed by Gaddafi's forces right at the start of last year's revolution. And now walking past a wall, 300 or 400 photos on the wall, mainly of young men, but there are some older men here too. These aren't just opponents of the former regime who've gone missing. There are photographs as well of some men in Gaddafi uniforms. Most of these people are missing, presumed dead.
We know that the people here want to have answers quickly.
Suad Massoudi from the International Committee of the Red Cross says relatives of the missing shouldn't expect too much, especially in a country with weak central government and little expertise in forensics.
That's why during the conflict they have been also trying to go to burial sites and mass grave, and they think that by taking out the human remains, they will be able to recognize and link these human remains with the families and to recognize them easily, which is not the case. And of course, this is a tragedy.
These are the woods just behind the Rixos Hotel in central Tripoli, where many journalists were, of course, stationed covering the conflict. We always were suspicious that something was happening in these woods because you could often hear the sound of gunfire at night. What I've just discovered is that dozens of people were killed, were murdered here. I've just been watching a video with an activist, which clearly shows the bodies of people lying on the ground here, just behind the hotel. And by the time the revolution had finished, many of those bodies, opponents of the regime, were unidentifiable.
Ali,
Boubacar, Ahmed, Faisal.
No one has lost more than Abu Salam. Photographs of five smart young men, all college graduates, are spread out on the carpet in the large family home. Abu Salam hasn't heard or seen from his sons since they were all abducted by Gaddafi's police last summer.
He went walking to the traffic light there, and they catch him. They hit him to say to his brothers to come.
It was like an ambush, a trap. All five boys went missing on the same day?
Yes. In the same time.
And where are they now, do you know?
I don't know.
We've been told there are as many as 8,000 missing or disappeared people in Libya. The old man keeps a lonely vigil in the hope that at least one of his boys may come home.
A year on from the U.S. involvement in Libya, that's the BBC's Wira Davis reporting. Joining us is Anne-Marie Slaughter, professor of politics and international affairs at Princeton University, former director of policy planning for the U.S. State Department. Anne-Marie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let's think now. We've got the benefit, and I suppose if you listen to Wira Davis's report there, benefit is a word we want to use guardedly, of hindsight in the intervention in Libya. We're 9 years on since the intervention in Iraq. Of course, Afghanistan, our longest war, and we're dealing with issues with U.S. soldiers and Afghan civilians there. And then, of course, the situation in Syria, a year since the demonstrations really began in earnest a year ago over the weekend. What do you think the argument for intervention is becoming in our time? Is Syria a no-brainer? Was Libya an easy walkover, in a sense? Was Iraq a disaster? Are these categories going to be fixed in stone as history begins to inform us of what's gone on here?
I think the first thing to say is I don't think that the use of force is ever a no-brainer. But the second is these are very, very different wars. The war in Afghanistan was a war in legitimate self-defense approved by the United Nations. We were attacked by al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was in Afghanistan. We asked the Afghan government to give them up to us. They wouldn't. We went to war. The war in Iraq was our invasion, our attack on Iraq without U.N. sanction and without U.N. approval, and it was an unnecessary war. We did not have to go to war, and when we did, we discovered that, in fact, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Libya is, again, a U.N.-approved intervention in which there were no U.S. troops on the ground, and U.S. air support played a supporting role after the initial attacks on air systems. Syria would be much more like Libya, but it is more complicated, and right now we don't have U.N. approval.
So what would – I mean, if we didn't get U.N. approval, and you see over the last week the emails and leaked sort of investigative reports that, you know, it seems as though Bashar al-Assad's wife, at least, is able to violate the sanctions by purchasing luxury goods in places all over Europe. You know, maybe the sanctions aren't working here. Maybe there is a trigger point for some additional kind of intervention, but it seems as though the U.S. is not willing to take any further steps here.
Well, the U.S. is not willing to go without at least regional approval. In other words, with Libya, what we had was first the Arab League calling for a no-fly zone, and the Arab League went to the United Nations. Here, the Arab League's gone to the United Nations to call for a plan that does not involve the use of force, but a plan asking Assad to step down. That was vetoed. The Arab League hasn't gone further than that. I think the U.S. is right to insist that the countries in the region have to take the lead. From my view, if the Arab League were to decide to do something more forceful, I actually think we would be justified in backing them up even without UN Security Council approval. We would have approval of the UN General Assembly, and at this point I think the veto is deeply immoral and illegitimate.
Well, that's an interesting point. So in a sense, the reluctance to go into Syria is a part of a lesson learned in Iraq. The U.S. is not going to go it alone anymore.
Yes, I think that is right. I think it's also a deep part of President Obama's overall security strategy, which places a great deal of emphasis on regional institutions, saying, look, the countries that are most deeply affected by a crisis have to be willing to act for us to back them up. We're not going to get out front of the countries that are right there. We end up holding the bag and often really in situations we don't understand.
Well, Anne-Marie Slaughter, I asked Jay Carney this question, of course, spokesperson for the Obama administration, and I said if the U.S. had not gone into Iraq, had not had this disheartening lack of success in Iraq and had not gone it alone in Iraq, do you think there would be the appetite perhaps to intervene unilaterally in Syria, that the Iraq war has basically meant that the U.S. will not be intervening internationally, even if the humanitarian urgency is as great as it could be?
I certainly think that's a large part of it, although I certainly hope that is not the lasting legacy of the Iraq war. Caution, yes, but not being willing to intervene in very different circumstances would be doubly tragic. That war was wrong, but the intervention in Libya was right. We should have intervened in Rwanda. We intervened in Kosovo, and that was right. And in the end, those were interventions that have been very much in our long-term interests, as well as allowing us to stand up for the values we profess.
Enumerating the conflict zones that the U.S. has either been involved in or has been diplomatically on the front lines of, we are certainly far removed from the so-called Vietnam era, that's for sure. Anne-Marie Slaughter, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Anne-Marie Slaughter is professor of politics and international affairs at Princeton University and former director of policy planning for the U.S. State Department.